snipered us. You hit the live button before we were ready.
I like doing that.
Everyone is confused.
Well, hello, everyone.
Hi.
And he does it again.
Oh, hello, Kitty. Oh, my cat's telling me if he needs to jump up here. Well, hello, everyone. Good evening. Welcome to the show. It's a little bit of a crazy night, or maybe just for me. It's homecoming night tonight for my daughter, and so I've been driving around cars full of girls to dinner and pictures, and it's great and crazy at the same time. But we're here now, and this is Spilling Ink. Yes, and you know us all, I'm sure, at least us hosts. We've got the lovely Katie Salitis in Las Vegas. And then J.E. Taylor in the Maine. Are we Maine?
We're Maine until the next time I'm on the show, yeah.
Okay, all right. We're still in Maine now. Yes. And then we have a big panel of guests tonight. We've got this place full. So we have Josie McCade. How are you doing tonight, Josie?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Wonderful, wonderful. And Christine Raymond. Hi, Christine.
Hello.
And there's no storm tonight, right? So we're safe with you.
Oh, clear skies.
good. Last time we tried to have Christine on, she had some weather interference, so that was no good. And then yeah. V.S. Holmes, how are you tonight, V?
I'm doing good. Thanks so much for having me.
Wonderful. And you've got a serious podcasting setup going on there. Do you do a lot of this?
Yes. Yeah, I do audio recording for audiobooks, and I also have a podcast that I run, which is author interviews. So this is fairly new. I'm mostly at the point where I don't smack it accidentally.
Yeah. What do you have underneath that muff? What kind of mic are you using?
Good question.
Never mind.
The one that came in the mail that I ordered.
Awesome.
I'll send you the details if you're curious at some point.
Yeah, I'm just curious. You know, I'm the kind that I'll obsess over something for months and months and months and months and then finally buy it. So it's like, okay, I have everything there is to know about this silly little microphone when I really don't need to. Yeah. No, are you guys hearing that weird static? Is that coming from me?
Yeah.
Is that me?
You know, it's funny, Jason, whenever you're researching microphones because of the shared Google that we have, I can always tell because the YouTube feed will fill up with all kinds of like tech specs and product reviews. And so I know he's like looking for new stuff when he does that.
Well, in my most recent thing is because I'm creating, okay, guys, since you haven't heard this before, I'm making a book trailer. Now, before everyone rolls their eyes, because we all hate book trailers.
I love book trailers.
You love them? Okay. Good.
I write scripts over book trailers.
Well, I'm doing something different with this book trailer. I am not making a book trailer that is a bunch of stock images with a Ken Burns effect on it. What I'm doing is I'm actually creating a book trailer that's more like a Hollywood horror movie trailer. So my wife and I have been out shooting all sorts of hours and hours and hours of footage that is going to, of course, end up being 1 minute for this book trailer. We're having so much fun, but I've been researching how to do these different effects in my video editing program on YouTube, because YouTube is the best. And so I'm sure the Spilling Ink history is just all Final Cut Pro effects and how to do it. But no, it's a lot of fun. It's been so much fun to be back behind the camera again. You know, because my wife and I own a photography studio, and she kind of took over doing everything, you know, a few years back, and I just do vet tech and writing stuff. But now that I'm actually using a camera again, it's like, man, I really miss this. I got to do more of this. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to have to start shooting book trailers for everybody, I think.
Speaking of your wife, those pictures she posted with the butterflies were gorgeous.
Oh, they were so much fun. Oh, you're ripping my headphones out, Kat. God, stop it. Oh, she is so damn talented. I'll tell you what, that woman, she can do it all. She really can. So, did you guys want to say hi to Leah?
Oh, hi, Leah.
And I keep getting this weird static. I'm wondering
Barris
if maybe.
Is
Barris is
my back.
All right, Barris.
What a cutie. Oh, so what are we doing tonight? We've got a theme going on here tonight. What's our theme tonight? Nobody?
Anybody? Nope. Nope. Not even.
Well, you
our
guys
theme is behaving ourselves online, which is what we're trying to do.
Yeah. I know, interrupting each other.
Well, there's behaving yourself, and then there's just not being a total D-bag, I think.
But where is that line? Because it's a really blurry line these days.
You know, and you know what, Katie? I'll tell you what. I think, and maybe it's a little vain, but I think the line is with the great Jason Lavelle. Because I'll tell you what, I'm goofy to the point of being obnoxious, but I don't think I ever do anything that's just being a jerk, you know? I don't.
No one just told you. That's what.
Well, that could be. I feel like with all the people we have on the show, somebody would have told me, "Hey, dude, you're kind of an asshole."
Well, I think that was one of my questions about it, whether I can swear.
I think a lot of the perspective, though, on whether or not somebody is being a jerk or not comes from knowing that person. Because mm-hmm. if you are just a funny, sarcastic individual, you might come across to a friend one way, but to a total stranger is another. And that perception can really, you know, cause problems.
Well, and with social media, most of the interactions are text-based. And even with emojis, you can't really tell what someone means. Because, like, yeah, sure, they're putting the smiley face there, but do they mean it? And, you know, you can't gauge it at all.
It's like what bless your heart really means.
Right. Yeah, where you're like, ha, ha, ha. It's like.
Do you almost feel like you have to add LOL to the end of everything that you say, just so that people know that you really don't mean to hurt their feelings, you're just being funny?
That's what I do with ha, ha, because I refuse to use LOL. I've got weird hold-ups about emojis and certain abbreviations. And so I'll always say, like, ha, ha, and then it's like, I hope they realize I mean it. Like, I'm not. Is it? LOL.
So I want to find out a little bit more about each of you. And I already know a lot about Katie. I know some about Jane, and what I do know, I mean, frankly, terrifying. It scares me. But I want to find out a little bit more about our guest tonight. And since you're just below the terrifying one, V, could you tell us a little bit about kind of who you are and what you do? You mentioned running a podcast and doing some audiobook narrating, but you also write. So give us the V.S. Holmes experience.
Oh, dear. Well,
looking
I do a lot of things. And hopefully I do most of them relatively well. So I write sci-fi fantasy. I have two series, and they're both for adults. And I run the Amphibian Press podcast, which is mostly author interviews. I like to kind of dig into, like, the nitty-gritty of people's concepts and their inspiration for whatever book or series that they're talking about. So that's sort of my author persona, and I dabble in narration, mostly for my own stuff right now, though I'm picking up a few other projects. And my day job is as an archaeologist, so that's why there's bones and dead things behind me. I'm not just a serial killer. So yeah, that's sort of what I do. And I draw a lot from my experience as an archaeologist and learning about new people for my work.
You are totally officially, cool. Yeah, officially the coolest person ever.
Thank you.
Now, my wife and I just recently started watching Bones again, the TV show Bones, and as you were saying that, it so reminded me of Temperance Brennan, and I don't know if you like the show or not, but I mean it's a compliment. It's a good thing.
I really love the show. I love what they did with the female characters, especially, and I love what they did with spoilers, some disabled characters. The science isn't accurate, but that's fine. I'm letting it go.
Well, and you know what? I feel like, you know, because I'm a vet tech when I'm not writing. And so whenever I watch any kind of TV show or movie or blah, 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 that has, you know, any kind of vet medicine, of course I'm like scrutinizing it. But you know, when it comes down to if there's enough reality and enough accuracy just to get the reader or the viewer interested, it's okay. You know, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's nice if it is, but some things are just too complicated, I think.
Or boring.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Frankly, boring.
Exactly. Like I listened to a podcast called This Podcast Will Kill You. And it's all about infectious diseases. And I've got to be a giant dork or something because I'm enthralled listening to this. But I bet it's like the most boring thing ever to most people.
I like that one too.
That's a good one. It's really good. So, all right. Well, Christine Raymond, can you tell us a little bit about you and what you do?
Sure. But first, I'd like to point out that V said that she's not just a serial killer.
Did you? I got that too.
Sometimes.
I kill a lot of characters, okay?
Oh, okay.
A lot of characters.
Well, that's I am an author. I also host a podcast. And when I'm not writing, I'm podcasting, I'm working on promos, I'm taking care of my fur babies, I'm doing laundry, that kind of stuff. You know, the usual. I started out writing historical Western romance, went into contemporary, and just recently started Cozy Mystery Series. Oh. So, cast my 100th episode airs next Wednesday. So, I'm excited about that.
Oh, awesome. Tell us about your podcast a little bit more.
It's called Wordplay with Christine Raymond, and I chat with authors pretty much about anything. Josie knows she's been one of my guests, and then actually she was a guest host where she chatted with me. It's very casual. Yeah, she did too. It's just really casual though. You know, we talk about books and writing, but it's also, I mean, we've talked about crocheting and people's favorite alcohol, and we've exchanged recipes. It's just kind of a really, it's more just to let readers get to know the authors a little bit better, more of the personal side than just their writing side.
And that's kind of something we try and do here with Philly Ink. We want to know the person behind the book and not just ask the, what inspires you? Where did you come up with your character? We want to know who you are.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's what I try to do. So it's a lot of fun. It'll be a year old on October 31st. So I'm pretty psyched to have my 100th episode ready to go. And I'm actually almost all the way booked into 2020 already. I have like, I think, 8 spots left for the year.
Wow. So,
yeah.
Congrats. That's awesome.
Thanks.
Super cool.
Josie can tell you, I guess people like it, right, Josie?
They do, very much. And didn't you just say you got syndicated or whatever?
Well, yeah, sort of. Starting Wednesday, I'm going to be on Artist First Radio Network.
Yeah.
They have me, a slot for me. So that's pretty
cool.
That's
so cool.
That's awesome.
That's so cool.
Heck yeah.
Thanks.
Well, Josie, tell us about you and what you do.
Well, I jack of all trades, master of a few. I was a librarian for almost 20 years. I write romantic comedy. I write funny, humorous mysteries and thrillers because I could never be Jason Bourne, but you know, I could be a guy that really screws it up and comes out on top occasionally. I also live on a farm in Ohio. I call lovingly mostly Dust Bunny Farm. For obvious reasons. I also write a lot of nonfiction. I write for magazines and newspapers, probably well over 20 years, 5,000 to 10,000 articles. I also write for Readers Entertainment News, which is a blog that is centered on authors, books, book news, literature, and I write scripts for book trailers for the same company. So I do a little bit of everything.
That's awesome.
Truly very the master cool. or the jack of all trades.
Yeah, truly. Yeah.
Now,
I skip around a lot. I think I get bored with one thing too much. So, you know, it kind of have a lot of irons in the fire at the same time.
I get that.
You almost have to, yeah, to be in this industry. You can't just do one thing. You have to be able to do a lot of interlocking things that work within each other. Not just to keep it fresh, but also just to maintain within the industry. We talk a lot about just being a writer is not enough. You have to be a promoter. You have to be a personality. I mean, you can't just go, I wrote words, I'm done.
Yeah, true.
Hey, yes. Katie. You've got a pretty wicked echo over there.
I do?
No, Katie.
Oh.
Either that or it's everybody, but I don't hear it on Josie at all.
Let me pop out and pop back in then and see if that corrects it.
Okay, okay.
I'll be right back.
So we have a question from the great Joey Compton. Her question is, well, since you all have podcasted, what is the most interesting commonality you find with your guests? And this question is up for grabs for anyone.
I just tweeted about a funny observation that I had podcasting, which was everyone's laughs sound ridiculous when you're audio editing. Like, well, you know, the first time you hear, I mean, maybe this is like dating ourselves here, but when the first time you ever hear your voice on the answering machine, you're like, oh God, that's me. It's just like kind of horrifying because you don't have the like deep bass resonance of your own skull. And it was like that, but it was kind of wonderful because I had this realization. I was editing like three in a row, and it was everyone's laughs when you like cut them into pieces or when you're just listening to them like isolated, we all sound so ridiculous. And it was really freeing because it's like, now I don't need to worry that I sound like a fool because we all sound like fools. And that was probably my favorite thing, though maybe not exactly the answer that he was looking for.
No, that's great. And you know, it's funny as you can always tell when people are laughing, even if you're just looking at the waveform, because you see that.
Yeah, the boom, boom.
Speaking of, because you mentioned hearing yourself on the answering machine for the first time, and yes, that's always eye opening. There was a time, and this was, about 8 years ago, where I was a competitive triathlete, and this was back when I was. Way more fit. I wasn't chubby like I am now. I was runner guy. And my wife had been taking some pictures of us running toward the finish line.
Oh no.
And I'm looking back through the pictures and I see my teammates. So I'm just editing them up and sending them over to them. And then I see this guy and I cannot figure out who it is. And it's not until I look down at the numbers that I realize that those were my numbers, because my face was like,
right, yeah.
Oh my God, it was so jarring. It was so jarring, but anyhow, okay. So the question was: are we seeing any commonalities amongst our guests that we have onto our podcasts? Oh, Katie was here, and now she's gone.
Oh, I just go ahead, really whoever. Find it. It's really interesting to me when I chat with my guests that, you know, we're all doing the same thing. We're all writing books, but it's a different process for everybody. And I mean, I know that's not necessarily a commonality, but in a way it is, because it's just, it's that we have in common that we're all doing it differently, but we have the end result, the same thing. Mm-hmm. We're all getting our books out there. And it's when I talk to authors about how they, you know, how some sit down and they write 6,000 words in a day and another author will write for, you know, 20 minute spurts throughout a week or whatever it is. And I don't know. I think I'm more entertained by them than by me.
Oh, I agree totally with that. I mean, I feel like the guests are the ones that are keeping me going. I'm just kind of there for the ride. Well, yeah. What about you, Josie? Do you notice any commonalities amongst your guests?
I don't podcast as much as I do written interviews, Q&As, that type of thing. And I think what I find most common is everyone tries to, on personal questions, write what they think their readers want to hear. There's been a few authors when I've gotten interviews that are really gut-wrenchingly honest about events in their life or what precipitated their writing. But I think quite a commonality, and perhaps it's because most interviews, whether it's podcast or written, tend to ask the same questions of authors. And I think they tend to start getting a pat answer for all of them. Mm-hmm. So I try to ask questions that kind of push them a little bit one way or the other. And when that happens, and like with Christine doing the way that she does it, it kind of gets you off of that usual, where'd you get your idea and where did this mm-hmm. come from, et cetera, and puts you on a different thought process so that you can, your readers do get to know a little bit more about you personally versus just the pat answer that you send in to every Q&A that is sent to you.
Well, and I think that that's, and I am, what I don't know if guilty of is the right way of saying this, but the first real one-on-one interview I did, she's
sorry,
still there.
We're fine.
No, you're all good.
pet situation.
I think it was last year or the year before, I started to try to do in-person one-on-one interviews with authors that I could kind of find in my region. And the very first one that I did was with fantasy author Jacqueline Carey. And she was wonderful. I really enjoyed speaking with her. She's a lovely person. However, when I asked the questions I had written out, I noticed that they were the same answers I was hearing from when she would give other interviews online. I was like, okay, from that interview forward, I knew that I had to really change what I was doing because I didn't want those stock answers. I really wanted to get into it, you know? So now when I interview an author one-on-one, instead of asking more broad stroke type questions, I will pick out individual scenes or even lines from their books and say, all right, let's talk about this because this really struck me and I want to know what it meant to you. And so it made a big difference from one interview that if you watch the interview, it's on our YouTube, it's just fine. But I know that those are the same answers she was giving over and over. So, and I wanted something a little bit better than that. So I'm always looking to find a way to dig a little bit deeper into people's heads and pull out stuff that maybe somebody hasn't pulled out before.
It's that conversational level that you want to get to where you're having a real one-on-one versus just question, answer.
Yeah. Well, and Anita, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I did something kind of different a couple of weeks ago in a group where they had set it up where the readers would buy one of my books, a specific book, and then they submitted questions to me and I did a live Q&A with them.
Oh, that's cool.
And bad echo, sorry, hang on. It was a lot of fun because I got to ends again that I wouldn't normally necessarily put in an interview or something, but they were asking, you know, specific, well, why did you write this about this character? And it was kind of nice for me to be able to think, okay, why did I write that about that character or explain why I did? And two of the readers came up with the same question about the main character's daughter and why did you write her so unfeeling towards her mother? And I said, you know, that struck me because I didn't write her that way. So it was interesting to me that's how they interpreted what I wrote. And it's just really a really good experience.
Yeah, that
there's
would
definitely
be... No, I was just going to say, it'd be really nice to for us as authors to hear more of that, to be able to see through the reader's eyes. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. I feel like that's like are the curtains just blue or are they like is there something more there, that like debate we always see about English class?
Mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, the curtains were just blue.
Well, and especially when you go back and like read your own work and you're like, oh wait, like was that what I meant to do now that I have more insight into myself, or was that really just random? I think that's kind of fun.
Well, I want someday for someone to find meaning and something I've written, and then I could just own it. I'd be like, hell yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
I always think it's interesting hearing you're an audio producer as well, hearing your books back in audio, because it's like, oh, mm-hmm. okay, well, maybe I didn't mean it that way. So yeah. Hearing it back, the auditory as opposed to the visual of the words is quite interesting.
Yeah, especially when you have someone who's a narrator who maybe you don't know them personally, or you don't know like really anything about them, because my sci-fi was narrated by someone else. And that, like, hearing those characters' voices and like accents and all that aside, but like just the intonation, it's like, oh, that I never thought of her saying it that way, but no, like yep. That works too. And you know, it's really fascinating.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, we have another question here. Where is it? Okay, Anita Stewart. How do you handle a less than chatty guest? That is a good question, Anita.
Especially all right, who? You're an introverted host.
I'm a super introvert. I love you all. I hate people. and so I can really empathize with it. But it makes it harder, right? Like, because I don't know how to make conversation. Absolutely. Like, that's the guest's job.
Yep.
Right.
You're the interesting one. Interesting.
And that's what I tell them on my show before I start recording, is that this is not an interview show. This isn't like a question mm-hmm. and answer. You need to have a list prepared. This is just a casual conversation.
Mm-hmm. And between then, friends.
So of course I'll ask. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And of course I'll ask a question like, okay, you know, oh, so I see your new book's out, you know, tell me a little bit about why you write fantasy. And they'll give a pat answer and then just stop. And I'll be sitting there like, okay, next, because I don't, it's totally mm-hmm. off the cuff. So yeah, it's a challenge sometimes when the guest is really nervous or doesn't really know what to expect or really isn't a conversationalist. So mm-hmm. yeah, how you handle it is you kind of muddle through and do a lot of editing.
and just hope that they say something that can spark a question, because like I do prepare a little bit, like I'll have like maybe 5 to 7 points that I want to hit, and sometimes I don't get to them because like we're talking about something way more interesting, but I like having those because sometimes you need them. But yeah, if it's like I've had interviews that only have lasted like 15 minutes when I aim for 40, and I'll just be like, bonus episode, short little bonus episode, like it's
I'll share a little story. Several years ago, I was interviewing a very, very well-known science fiction author for the newspaper I worked for. And every time I would ask this man a question, it was one-word replies. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No. Yes.
No. He spent all his words on his book.
Yeah. And finally, I was getting really desperate. And it was being filmed. The camera guy was there, TV station, the newspaper was there. You know, there were a lot of media outlets, and I thought, how am I going to save this? And I had read his book. I liked his book. And finally, I said something about this extraterrestrial alien that he'd created. And I got about 3 words about that. And I said, do you think toilets look the same way on his space station as they do on ours? He looked at me and he died laughing. And about that, then we had this entire discussion about the possibility of toilets in space. But I got an interview.
Yeah, good. Just on autopilot, right? Like,
and then he opened up about everything else. But you know, I would say, so you write science fiction? Yeah.
Yeah.
How about your characters? Where do they come from? My mind. I mean, it was really brutal. But the toilet thing, really opened it up, and that's a pun.
So you engaged his writer's mind. Like, he instantly went into fix-it mode, and how does this work? And that did
I write about a toilet? Can I write about a toilet? Do these aliens poop? I mean...
The next book, Do Aliens Poop?
Do you remember the episode where I asked the guest if they wipe from the front or the back, the two guys we had on?
Unfortunately, yes, I do.
Yes, yes.
He has to spit everywhere.
I used to work in healthcare, and we had an unfortunate conversation when we learned about some of our coworkers' hygiene practices. It's very similar.
It's amazing. You've seen the memes, I'm sure, that there's also the standing up to wipe versus sitting down. And I'm like, who the hell would stand up? But then it says 50% of people do that. So I just...
And they're thinking the same thing about you.
Yeah, I know. It's not right. Don't sit your butt back down.
Silently judging you. Does he stand up or not?
But what about you? What about you, J.E.? How would you deal with a less than chatty guest?
Well, the first rule of interview is ask open questions. Josie was doing that, but she was still getting short answers. So then you would try to engage. I'm really pretty good at conversation, unless I'm, had a really bad day at work or I'm like exhausted or whatnot. But I'm pretty good at, even talking to the toaster. Like that. You can,
Hey, what does the toaster say back?
I am not an introvert. What does the toaster say? Clean me.
Stop setting me on fire.
Well, I do that too. So I don't know. I guess that's the key for me. And I used to work in television, so I learned from some of the reporters.
I recently was at a writer's retreat, and one of the classes I decided to take was on public speaking, mm-hmm. which I'm kind of okay at, even though I'm an introvert. I just pretend like I'm acting or something. I don't know. And I learned a little bit, but what I learned the most was the instructor was telling us watch really bad public speaking. And the same thing is true for interviews. I've seen a couple really bad interviews, both because of the guest and because of the interviewer, it depends. And you'll learn so much more from a bad one because you can be like, oh, well, I'm not going to do that. And that honestly stuck with me the most. And I think it's really helped my podcasting too, because it's not public speaking, but it is, but it's not. So yeah, that was pretty cool.
Well, and I think that because I also have a show called The Raven, and the Raven is more of a literary show than a talk show. But we read a little bit of the author's work, and then we have a discussion specifically about that, and we really try to stay on task with it. And I get it once in a while where someone will give me a one or two word response, and I think my method has become I will go a little bit further with it. If I've asked them about a certain theme and they just give me a short response, I will ask them a more specific question about it and see if that gets them going. And if not, then I try to relate something personal to it and see if that gets them going. And if that doesn't, I'm just like, okay, we're moving on to the next one and we'll try again. But I really haven't had a real stinker yet. I haven't had one like what Josie had, thankfully. But you pulled it together on that.
Another
one.
Pun intended there.
Real yeah. Well, what about you, Katie? How do you get talking?
Oh, for me?
Yeah.
See, that's the beauty of setting this show up is I'm super introverted, so I don't really do conversation well unless I'm super engaged in the topic. So I have two other co-hosts who I can rely on when I can't think of something to say. And Jason, you're always there with some kind of, witty, funny, some Jasonism that will get the conversation back on track.
Jasonism, I like that.
Just that way.
Yeah, I'm usually taking it off track. I don't know what you're talking about.
That helps, apparently, with toilets.
And we do. Why do we always go to toilet humor? It always goes there.
Sorry.
we can all relate. Everybody poop, right?
Everybody does. You don't like to admit it, but everybody does.
Rochelle actually has a couple of good questions on here. So, Rochelle, this question, if you could leave it up there, Katie, is how do you access a writer's mind while asking the same questions that everyone really wants answers to? any suggestions on how to bridge the gap? I mean, aside from alien poop. You know, alien poop is always a great idea. But I'll tell you what I do, and I kind of just mentioned it, is when I interview an author on The Raven, I read everyone's book completely. And I do that because I don't want to ask the same questions that everyone does. I want to only ask questions about the things that really stood out to me. So I'll find this point in, you know, when Hannah finally picked up the bomb and ran across the street, how do you think she was feeling? Or what were you feeling when you wrote that? That way I'm getting an answer that I know, you know, X number of interviews didn't get last time, because I'm asking a little bit more specific questions. So that's how I do it. But I think that you'll find that we all do that a little differently. So who else wants to take this? How do you, we kind of were just talking about something similar to this.
Well, you think about the problem solving angle. Writers are generally problem solvers of the problems they create. And so they like, you know, taking things apart, figuring how it works and putting it back together. So if you look at an interview in the same light, and let's say the standard questions aren't going to get you a good answer, give them something to fix, you know, reverse engineer it, you know, like you said, asking them how a character feels, or, you know, what steps did they need to do to make this plan happen? You know, get them really thinking about the problems in the story that they fixed, and try and use that to get them to open up a little bit more.
And if you find that part of the story or that theme in the story that they were really into and happen to hit on that, they'll just go and go and go and talk about it. It that's great.
And then you smile and nod for the rest of the time.
Yep. And you're done. It's easy.
Well, that's is find something that they're really excited about. And it might be have something to do with their book, and it might not. But once that guess, you find that one thing that they'll just go on forever. I mean, I've had guests where I've had to say, okay, sorry, time's up. You know, we have to stop because it's just, they just keep going. But I think that's the key, is just trying to find that one thing that they're really, really excited about.
I love when you get those interviews that go to the point of you almost have to stop them, because you can turn that into a second interview later, and you've got material to work with for another time. Last week we had to do that. We had two guests on that were just amazing, and they had so much to say. And the conversation.
Andy Teliquin and Craig DeLuey, right?
Yeah, it just went, and there was no pauses, no awkwardness, no nothing. We actually had to stop and go, okay, we're inviting you guys back. So just hold that thought. We're coming back again in a month with you two, because they're just wonderful about, you know, delivering the information, because they're so passionate.
Well, yes. I'm listening to you guys and reading comments. So I'm getting what's a comment and what's actual you guys mixed up here. Okay. So, cause we were talking about, letting people go a little too far or getting too personal. And, Rochelle, you've got fantastic questions. Thank you for joining in. Rochelle also asked, what defines the line of taboo? If you get personal and sometimes kinky, how do you bridge the gap how do you bridge the gap between creative and too personal in interviewing? And I want to, real quick, Rochelle, and I know I'm talking a lot tonight, guys, but I want to tell you about my uncomfortable interview I had recently. You told me you wanted to jump up here. Jeez, I was just trying to help. Okay, so very recently, it is the second to last episode on The Raven. So if you go to theravenpodcast.com, it's the second to last episode. It is bizarre. I did my reading, and it was just fine, and the interview commenced, and it kind of went completely off the rails, and I wasn't prepared for it, and listening to it you can tell that I was not prepared for it. But the subject matter was pedophile priests, and the short story was about a boy who had been assaulted by a priest. And when he started talking about this, and instead of talking about the writing, what ended up happening, it was this was a 45 minute long, really angry, impassioned rant against the church and the people that had kind of colluded to allow these things to happen. And I was, you know, I kind of rolled with it, but I was like, oh my God, what do I do here? Because if I engage this too much, it's going to get out of control, and I don't really want to alienate listeners, but I also want to give this author the time to speak about their process and what they went through. And obviously this guy went through a lot. And so it was a really strange experience for me. And even looking back now, I still don't quite know what the right way for me to handle it was. But so if you ever want to listen to just something a little strange, because there were points where he was yelling and then other points where I was pretty sure he was sobbing. And you know, of course, I'm sitting back here in my chair with the cat in front of me, like, oh my God, what am I doing? How do I get out of this? You know, how do I make this back, turn this back into a literary show? I don't know what I'm doing. But so that I wanted to bring that up because Rochelle had mentioned getting too personal. And for me, that was a show that got much too personal for that show. If it was on a different podcast or a different talk show, I can see that being appropriate. But I just felt like my listeners weren't getting a talk about the story. They were, I don't know, it felt very off-putting. So
how do you prepare for something like that? Mickey's got it right with the comment.
Yeah, you can't.
It was a little crazy. So, sorry, the cat is putting stuff up there on the screen. but anyhow, so that was my really uncomfortable interview. And you know what? He was a talented writer, and I personally really agreed with the things he was saying. I was disgusted by the things he was saying, but it wasn't appropriate for my show, and I didn't know how to get it back to my show.
You didn't know how to get it back on the rails.
Yes. Yeah. So now I know how you feel, Katie, when I just bring this show off into the middle of freaking nowhere.
Yes, but when you do it, it's like comic relief. We're not going down into the dark path. We're going somewhere fun and light and friendly, and it's okay.
Impromptu trauma therapy. Oh,
like I needed it after that.
Right. Yeah.
Oh Lord. All right. So let's get off Jason. Who else wants to talk about this? So okay. All right. So let's put this back up again because I kind of got us off the rails. What defines the line of taboo? If you get personal and sometimes kinky, I typically don't get kinky with interviewees, but how do you bridge the gap between creative and too personal in interviewing? So I'm really looking forward to hearing some other answers on this one. So if you're starting to get too kinky with your guest, how what do you do?
I haven't had that happen yet. So.
Right.
I pretty much got
a bit because I have authors I've interviewed who do write erotica. And most of them are aware that a news site or a podcast pretty much needs to remain PG-13. But a few times some of them will get carried away and you do have to kind of remind them that your podcast or your interview is not the forum for it. But like Jason, I also had an uncomfortable situation in that I interviewed an author and it was a written interview. And she had said one of the scenes in her book came from a real life assault. She was a rape victim. And I kind of saw it and I put it in the interview, but I let it go at that. And she emailed me when she saw the interview posted online. And she said, you know, not you or anyone else have ever asked me to expand on that. And I would really love to have a forum to talk about that and put it out there. So I did a follow-up interview with her. But it was one of those situations where I wasn't sure her being a victim, if it was something I should pursue or something I should just let her end it with that sentence in the interview. And I'm very grateful that she came back and told me she wanted to delve into that a little bit more, and basically in hopes that it might help some other victims deal with the trauma or come forward or get some sort of closure because she wanted to put it out there. So it's like you, it's very hard to know where that line is and how to draw it.
Well, and I'm glad that she contacted you too. And it would be so difficult to hear that and then make the decision to move on, even though you know it's the right decision, because I think that as people and as empathetic creatures, we want to know more so that we can care more.
Right.
Or at least that's how I am. But yeah, that's another. That's
sometimes you're not quite sure how much the victim really wants to put out there of their personal
want to
experience.
Drag them through it again. And,
right. You know.
Well,
the way I navigate it, usually because I talk to a lot of marginalized authors, and I myself am disabled and queer, so I'll sort of do a little sharing of my own first of all when I'm like toeing into the question, and I sort of let them hopefully gauge like the level of detail off of what I've shared and the brevity, and then hopefully they'll go a little bit more, not necessarily in detail, but elaborate on like maybe how it impacted their work or whatnot. But I try to let like, this is the level of detail we're at here, and then you know maybe they'll gauge from that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Christine, have you ever had any experiences like that?
No, not so far. And everybody knows going into it. My show's PG-13, also like Josie mentioned. And I do ask my guests ahead of time if there's any subject they do or don't want to specifically talk about. And they're really upfront with me about, you know, some might just say, I don't want to talk about my family, or I don't want to talk about, you know, this specific thing that has happened. And I may not even know what they're referring to, but I know not to even go near that.
Okay. Well, and here's another, you know, Katie and I briefly chatted about this before the show, because it seems like every month there's some author or director or producer out there who's been behaving fairly badly on social media, or posting things that are just not smart to post, even if you really believe in them. And I think the most recent one that popped up was Dan Simmons very recently, you know, posting a rant. But what type of things? Because here's the thing, as media personalities, I guess we'll call us. Ooh, I like that. Media personalities. That's cool. Makes it sound important.
Your title's just going to keep getting longer and longer.
Yeah. So we have, of course, our pages for our podcast, or our page for our media group, or our author page, or this group or that group or whatever. And we also have our personal page. However, especially on Facebook, everything is connected. So even things that you post on your personal page really are a reflection on your business. And the things you post on your business page, of course, reflect on your personal page. So what type of things really should people who are in the media business, who are podcasters or vloggers or YouTubers, what type of things should we stay away from posting in order to keep getting new viewers and keep our viewers happy? Is there any, do you have any recommendations?
I recently had to start posting more, like, well, not had to. I made the choice to start, not so much posting things, but the way I interact on Twitter has always been pretty candid, but also on Facebook. I realized I was getting a lot of comments and reviews on my books where they were like, well, the author seems super nice, but like, what's with her character swearing and what's with the sex? And so I realized like maybe I need to, when I'm not being like professional, when I'm not engaging with like interviews or whatever, maybe I need to start swearing more. And I've actually gotten more signups, and I'm seeing an increase in like the engagement with the audience that I'm actually looking for.
Give us a good curse. Come on.
Well, I mean, like, I dropped the F bomb all the time. I'm an archaeologist, so I can't speak without swearing usually.
Waiting. Come on.
Well, I told you I don't do it during interviews. if you take a quick scroll on my podcast, I always say, don't worry, it's a swearing podcast, because I can't. I can't not. So I think that's interesting. And I've also, because of the demographics I write, I try and post things that are relevant to that. So I'll post things about Pride Month or disability advocacy. And a lot of people I see will be like, oh, well, I can't post political stuff. And I think it's interesting because when your characters or the author themselves, when their existence is political by nature, it's really hard not to. And it's like, it's such a line that I've had to try and tell. And I've basically just given up with the, like, I'm going to tick someone off, but at least I know that if I do, they're probably not the person who wants to read my book. And I don't want to offend them by making them read my book without knowing what they're getting into, if that makes sense.
Well, you know what I've started doing is, because it's, I hate being political, but what I've started doing is posting the positive things about the way I feel. Mm-hmm. You know how, yeah. You know, I believe in love and equality for everyone, blah 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 blah. Instead of slamming someone else, mm-hmm. I'm trying to just do the positive thing, and you know, I haven't gotten a whole lot of backlash for that, so I'm thankful for that. But It's an awesome way
to do it. Yeah,
that's a clear distinction we should probably make, is that the author that got in trouble this week was basically shaming somebody with what mm-hmm. he was saying. And it's have a belief. It's okay to have an opinion. But I think when you're posting it to intentionally harm someone else, right. There's the line. If you're posting a belief and looking at it from the positive standpoint of what your belief does or has done, or, you know, and good it can do, that's okay. Even if you do get some backlash, you're trying to keep on the positive side. But when you're intentionally shaming somebody with your belief, then it becomes a no-no, you know, a bad publicity moment that can really screw with you.
Yeah. And how you engage with the replies too, because I a lot of the authors I've seen get in trouble, especially on Twitter, because it's such like a rapid fire, you have access to everyone thing.
It's the Wild West on Twitter.
Yeah. Like, The way these authors will respond, especially when it's like, you know, an author who's fairly privileged and maybe it's a more marginalized person who's commenting on the representation that the author gave, which is the way I've seen it the most. And the, you know, that gut instinct of like backlash or, you know, just getting really defensive. And I think the authors who get in trouble the most are the ones who really handle that badly. And it's hard because, like, it's our creative work. But you also need to just sit down sometimes.
Very true. I just kind of go by the rule of thumper. If you don't have anything good to say, right. Don't say anything at all.
Yes.
The internet's going to live forever. So if you don't want mm-hmm. someone else to see it, your kids to see it, whatever, don't put it out there. Keep it to yourself. Keep a journal. Scream in the backyard. But don't put it out there for public consumption.
Have friends that you tell it to.
Right. I mean, there's many people I am friends with online, and we are so far apart ideology or politically mm-hmm. and things like that. But it doesn't mean I don't respect them. We just disagree on a point.
Right.
And I would never go on their side and trash them because I disagree with a political point. And I think that's the problem today. I look at it, I disagree. And if I don't have anything to say, scroll on.
Right. Just,
yeah. Let it go.
Right.
You're much happier if you let it go.
Yeah. I mean, I have opinions, but I don't share them because they're my opinions. And right. You may not agree, and that's okay. You're allowed to not agree with my opinion.
And
there's always going to be those people who don't like what you say or what you think or how you live your life. And to me, it's not worth it.
Right. And right. When you're approaching any difficult subject, you gotta approach it with the heart, not anger or you know, anything. Your heart has to be in the right place with the conversations you're having, basically.
Yeah, and right.
The echo is
right. And if I wanted to comment on politics, I just have a political podcast. It wouldn't be a writing podcast. People come to me or to any of us for our books, for mm-hmm. escapism, for science fiction, for mystery, for whatever it happens to be. There's a lot of political right. podcasts out there, so they need to go there. It doesn't need to be seen on my timeline or on my social media.
Oh, for yeah. sure.
Paying attention to your particular exactly. branding
right.
will help you in the long run.
Yeah.
Well, rather than hurt you.
And I think as a general rule, and I think Josie said it perfectly, you know, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it. And I think you can expand on that and really kind of be more specific.
I stole it from Thumper.
Yeah. Well, and you know, if you're going to say something, ask yourself, you know, is this something a jerk would say? Is this an asshole thing to say? And if it is, probably don't say it. You know,
is it constructive?
Yeah.
Now, playing devil's advocate here, just to say, you know, put the other argument out there, because you'll have people who will say, well, if people aren't bringing issues to light, if people are just staying quiet, then nobody hears them. And to that I say, you are more than welcome to post things that you feel you need to say. Right. But it's how you do it, the intent that you do it with, and the way that you respond to people who are going to have a negative opinion that can hurt you.
Yes, if you post something that's attacking someone else or shaming someone else, you can expect that people are going to get very defensive, very angry, and attack you back. I'm friends with a woman on Twitter, and I won't give her name, but she's a trans woman, and she had posted a picture of herself a couple weeks ago and said, hey, you know, do you like my new top or whatever it was? And I said, yeah, you look great. And then I scrolled through the replies on it, and there were dozens and dozens and dozens of the most foul things you would ever hear. And I sent her a message. I was like, dude, is this every time you post you get this? And she's like, yeah, this is just my life. This is what happens. And I'm like, I just don't understand why we don't have to say things that will hurt other people. And I guess that's my opinion. Don't say things that are going to hurt someone else. Just
well, I'm probably the oldest person here. And fortunately in my formidable years, there was no social media, which was a blessing. But seeing some of the things today that are being said and done, whatever your walk of life happens to be, I mean, you can be, you know, straight white broad like me and post a question asking about, do you like my earrings? And somebody's going to be vicious. Right. And the point is, I think social media, because they can sit and hide behind that screen, it brings out the bully that wouldn't have been there if they had to face you face to face. And
it's much easier.
It's kind of like people in a car. You can walk into a store and they'll be perfectly fine, and they get behind a wheel and all of a sudden they're an asphalt bully, as I call them. Mm-hmm. And I think they do the same thing on social media, because it's very easy to sit back and be anonymous and say these hateful things. And it's very hard to learn how to not take them personally when they're aimed at you. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very difficult.
And it's difficult when you see something, not to respond in anger, even to someone else. Like the situation I just told you about, I really wanted to post something angry. But instead I just tweeted something about love, and you know what? That's all I can do, because otherwise I'll get sucked in that cycle of hate and I'll never get out.
And it doesn't stop. It just keeps perpetuating, and more people pile on to it on both sides of the issue, and it's never resolved. And you know, the person in the middle of it is the person that really gets hurt.
So just be nice.
There have been times that I've wanted to comment where I've actually typed comments to something on I deleted it because there's like, no point to it. You're not going to change someone else's mind.
No.
And they're going to keep that. And it's like, I just don't want to be sucked in.
What if
your prayer is not a glitch. Facebook does it anyway.
What if you opened a document and it was like a journal, but it was just of all the angry things you wanted to say, just so you're purging them out on that page?
I have a relationship where I did that. Where it's
I would like, hope no one ever found the journal.
Yeah, really.
They would know which dark room to put me in first.
It's funny. I was like, literally just minutes before I logged on for this chat, I was showing my husband the speech from Doctor Who, one of the more recent seasons, where the overarching theme is, why not just at the end be kind? And I feel like that's, I was like training for this without knowing for it.
Is that number 11?
I think it's number 12. It's Capaldi.
Capaldi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's he's talking to Missy and the Master. Spoilers. Yeah, it's one of Bill's seasons. So, okay. Or I think it's the only Bill season. So.
Cool. Awesome.
It's a good speech.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I love the Doctor. I don't know. He's just goofy and inclusive, and they're just awesome, man. It's a cool
thing
show.
About science fiction, whether it's Star Trek or Doctor Who or books, because they address a lot of political issues, a lot of social issues under the guise of an alien culture.
Yeah. It's so much easier to digest when, you know, it's not so obviously about you or about, you know, your enemies or whatever you want to think. It's so much easier to both solve problems and also analyze them from, you know, like the introspective point of view.
It is.
And then
when it's somebody else's world and not your own.
Right. Yeah.
Well, guys, I think that this has been, this has been a pretty good show. We're at our hour. So yeah, did we talk about anything we said we were going to talk about, Katie?
Yeah, we did actually.
Okay,
we did. Yes, we did.
We're doing good then. We're doing better than usual.
And did your wife get home?
She's been. That's why I keep looking off to the side. She's been updating me. She said that she's only about 15 minutes away, and she's not overheating yet. She thought that it was leaking radiator fluid.
Oh, okay.
So I was like, okay, well, we're gonna have to pull over. But she says it's not overheating, so we're happy. Hopefully, she'll be home soon.
But, okay.
Yeah. Well, all right, guys. I want to thank all of our guests and our lovely co-hosts for being here with us tonight. You guys have been amazing. You really have.
A wonderful show.
Well, thank you. This was fun.
Good.
And for all of our listeners out there, if you're listening on the podcast, be sure to like and share us. If you're watching this on Facebook, make sure you share it with all your friends, or later on when it's at YouTube, hit that like and subscribe button because it helps with our visibility. They've recently changed the algorithms.
Yay, algorithms.
Yay. And until then, we'll see you next week with more fun and author interviews and Jason being Jason.
Bye, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
See ya.